Manuscript Releases, Volume 11, Numbers 851 to 920, MR Number 879, Geographical Descriptions and Travel in the Western in 19th Century, The Mountains of Colorado, 1872. Here I am at Mr. Fair's, husband to your cousin, Addie Clough Fair, looking out and upward upon mountains of perpendicular rocks, estimated at 500 feet high. From the foot of these mountains to the top, upon ledges of solid rocks, slight excavations have been made, and houses built in every spot that could be made available by stone foundations. Directly in front of me are several tiers of houses, rising one above another. Never did I behold such a scene as this. There is scarcely a sign of vegetation, no trees, but abrupt, barren rocks. Some of these houses are very nice and expensive. Just before me is a large, fine house, built high on the top of the mountain. A wall of masonry several feet high bears up the front of the house, while the back of the house rests upon the solid ledge drilled and chiseled out for the builders. A very nicely furnished barn is built in the same manner. In stepping out of the house, there is not a level place for the feet to stand upon, unless built up like a platform. There are but a very few natural yards, and these are lower down the mountain, and are only 1 or 2 feet in width. They build up a yard several feet high, draw dirt, and place upon the top of the stone, and then have but a few feet to just step out of the doorway. It is only the most wealthy who can afford this extravagance. The homes of the poorer class, and even some very nice homes, have not 1 foot of level land around them. The banker's wife's mother stepped out in one of these high, made yards to hang out clothes. She was 60 years old. She made a misstep, fell from the wall, and broke her neck. The streets are exceedingly dusty. Black Hawk is an incorporated city, which runs into Central, another incorporated city. Both have 8,000 inhabitants, including Nevada. The mining enterprise keeps the country alive, but they say business is very dull now in the mining region. Mr. Walling took us up, up, up the mountains. We feared sometimes that we should never reach the top. We had a commanding view of the country. We could look down upon Black Hawk and Central, and see all there was of both cities. It looked fearful so high, and below was a fearful precipice of rocks. If the horses had stepped over to one side, we should have fallen hundreds of feet. We had a commanding view of the mountains. They were on every side of us. We could distinctly see the high mountains covered with large patches of snow. These banks of snow are estimated to be from 15 to 50 feet deep. Some of them are perpetual. Frequently, the air coming from these snowbanks was so chilly, although the sun was shining very warm in the valley, that we were obliged to put on extra garments in the mountains. Black Hawk and Central are a rough, seamed, scarred country. Heaps of rocks and dirt that have been cast out from the mining mills and from which the precious ore has been taken, were lying everywhere. We went into one of these, called Stamp Mills, in Nevada, and saw the machinery at work to separate the ore from the rubbish. It was quite a tedious process, and it was very interesting to see the working of the machinery. We obtained some fine specimens of quartz. The view upon the top of the mountain was most interesting. But words cannot present the picture before your mind in its reality. Landscape and Travel in the Mountains of Colorado, 1872. We have been slowly climbing the ascent with two engines drawing the train. We are upon the summit. One engine has been run off. We are now descending. We are 8,000 feet above the level of the sea. We are 130-some miles from Denver. The scenery is not charming. No farms or cultivated lands from Denver to Cheyenne. It was plains with nothing to relieve the monotony but large herds of cattle, 2,000 or more in a herd. Since we left Cheyenne, the land is undulating at first, becoming more uneven and the land broken. There are scattering evergreens, scraggy and stunted, apparently growing out of the crevices of the rock. There are large boulders. They seem as regular as if they had been laid by the hand of a mason workman. We have passed 5 deep cuts, covered with a roof that travelers shall not become snowbound. The soil is gravelly sand. Rocks seem to be congealed sand and gravel of a red cast. We have just passed a small house down among the rocks. Among the rocks are little patches of cultivated land. Rocks, rocks everywhere, bearing the appearance of great age. Rocks cast up like fortifications seem as though placed by a workman. I see at this moment immense rocks of singular shape, composed of sand and coarse gravel. We are just viewing a shanty. The chimney is topped with a barrel. The door is open, and the white heads of 4 small children are brought to view. No sign of cultivation anywhere in this view. We now leave the rocks and hills behind. The land is more like a plain. In some places, 4 rows of fences are built to protect the roads from drifting snows. 4:30. It is now snowing slowly. It has been quite pleasant all day, not uncomfortably warm or cold. We are now at Red Buttes, elevation 7,336 feet. Castles of rocks and pyramids of rocks of every conceivable shape. A train just passed with 2 engines, one with 6 drive wheels, the other with 8. Tuesday morning, September 24th, 1872. On the cars. We all are accommodated with berths on the sleeping cars, and we rested very well. Took our breakfast this morning with good appetites. A lady named Haffenway spoke to me in the sleeping cars. I think she had heard me, also your father, speak at the Health Institute. She was there when Mrs. Baker left for her home. We had an interesting interview. She is going to California for her health. Her sister is in a precarious condition. She has had hemorrhage of the lungs. Mrs. Haffenway is a banker's wife in Nebraska. She says she was benefited at the Health Institute, but home cares, the charge of 3 children, keep her debilitated. She says she shall live out of doors the most of the time this winter when not too cold. The climate of Nebraska is varying and changeable. We have just passed a mud village. Houses made of mud smoothed so nicely, they really looked nice. So nice. We thought them now in process of building, but we learned it was an old settlement left to decay. The village was moved to another section of this barren waste country. We have now passed a village of houses composed of mud, wood, and cloth. Many roofs are covered with cloth, and mud placed on the top of cloth. No trees are to be seen anywhere. No cultivated lands. In these villages, the railroad men reside. Nothing can be raised here. Traveling by train. From San Francisco to Battle Creek, 1873. Thursday, February 27th, 1873. Left San Francisco at 7 a.m. We arose at 5 o'clock to get our breakfast, finish our packing, and get to the boat which took us to Oakland. The people were unwilling to let us leave them, but as there was no one to accompany my husband, we felt that it must be right for us to go with him. We took seats in the cars at Oakland at 8 a.m. We had a stateroom, retired if we chose to be, apart from the passengers. I was sick in consequence of passengers being allowed to smoke on the cars. I could not eat, lay down much of the time. We passed much beautiful scenery. Passed Cape Horn, a most romantic and fearful spot, about dark. We felt to lift our hearts to God for His care and protection on the journey, especially in passing such dangerous places. En route to Battle Creek. Friday, February 28th, 1873. It is a beautiful day. We all rested well during the night. I became very sick. Headache, stomach sickness. Ate but little through the day. We had pleasant company on the train. My husband felt unusually well. Sister Hall was troubled with pain in her limbs. We saw snow, the first we had seen during the winter. Saturday, March 1st, 1873. We have had a beautiful day. We passed this Holy Sabbath upon the cars. We kept by ourselves. We changed cars at Ogden. I was very sick all day, could not eat anything. The strong, aromatic smell of cigars affected me seriously. My head was full of sharp pain, my stomach sick. I would break out in profuse perspiration, then become deathly faint and sick. I struggled hard against it. I prayed for help from God. I fainted quite away. Smoking was banished from the car when the conductor learned its effect upon me. My husband, Sister Hall, and myself prayed earnestly, silently, for help from above. How precious was Jesus to me in my pain and perplexity. Our prayers were answered. Relief came. From this time I improved. Sunday, March 2nd, 1873. We had another lovely day. I felt quite well, except for weakness and loss of appetite. We slept well during the night. We passed over the most dreary desert. Nothing interesting to be seen but snow and bunches of sagebrush. Monday, March 3rd, 1873. We have had a beautiful day. We have had no hindrance on account of snow. We passed through many snowsheds. I conversed with a young man who is dying with consumption. He is an infidel I cannot reach. He says when he dies, it is the last of him. He has led a dissolute life and dies as the beast dieth. It made the Christian life look so bright in contrast with the gloomy prospects of this poor sinner who could not comfort himself with any bright picture when he should live again. His brightest hope is in no existence beyond the grave. I gave him lemons and tried to make him as comfortable as possible, but sad, sad is the thought of this man's future. A just God he must meet. Tuesday, March 4th, 1873. We are still blessed with beautiful weather. My rest was not as good last night. We have a beautiful car, heated with steam pipes. We have lived out of our basket the entire journey with the exception of expending 35 cents for sundries. We are losing our appetites. Our friends go out to meals. They frequently expend $1 each for a hasty meal and lie down at night restless and cannot sleep because of eating so heartily. We have rested well nearly every night. We took our last meal at 1 o'clock p.m., changed cars at Chicago, arrived at Battle Creek at 10:30 p.m. Brother Abbey was waiting with sleigh for us. We came to our own home. Got to rest at 1 o'clock a.m. Home in Battle Creek. Dear children, we have received 2 letters from Edson, and I think 3 from Willie. We should have written you immediately, but I thought Father would write, and he thought I would write, so between us both, you were neglected. We had a very pleasant journey home with the exception of smoking on board the cars, which made me very sick. For 3 days I could eat scarcely anything. I could not understand my feelings. I learned that smoking was allowed in the palace car. We paid nearly $40 extra for the conveniences of the palace sleeping car. I decided to endure the smoking so as not to be called a fusser. The 3rd day, when the aromatic odor of the cigars came to me, I became stomach sick. The most intense pain pierced my eyeballs and back of the eyeballs in my head. It seemed that the top of my head was crashing like broken glass. My distress became very great. I thought I was going into a fit. Large drops of perspiration stood upon my face, and my entire body broke out in profuse perspiration. Then came a confused noise in my head, and I became blind and fainted entirely away. In half an hour, I revived by lemon juice being pressed in my mouth. I knew as soon as I revived that it was the smoking of cigars which had thus affected me. All in the cars were alarmed, and smoking was banished from the car. I have not fully recovered from the effects of this illness. In regard to the journey, it could not have been better for us in July. We made close connections and arrived at Battle Creek Tuesday, 10 o'clock p.m. Brother Abbey was waiting for us with sleigh. We telegraphed him soon after leaving Chicago to meet us at 10.05 p.m. It seems very nice to rest in our own home, on our own good bed, after an absence of 9 months. Travel by train westward to Colorado, 1873. Wednesday, June 25th, 1873. My husband and myself occupied the stateroom. Sister Hall and Willie kept the seats in the car and rested very well. We had no dust. We could not have had a more favorable time for traveling. At Cheyenne, we changed cars for Denver. The heat on this last 100 miles was almost beyond endurance. The blood rushed to my head, and my face felt burned. The very air seemed hot and seemed to burn our flesh. It seemed some like the time that will scorch men with heat. We were 1 hour behind time. We did not get to Denver till about 30 minutes past 7 o'clock. We hired an express wagon and were taken to my niece, Louise Walling's. We were well received, and we were very weary and glad to get to rest. Denver, Colorado. Thursday, June 26th, 1873. We have all rested well. It has been a cool night. It is a beautiful morning. We walked out to purchase some things, but did not expend anything. Denver. Friday, June 27th, 1873. Another beautiful day. We walked 1 mile and back from the city stores 3 times. We ordered mattresses made of white hair and a couple of pillows. We have much confusion among the children. Cannot write. We purchased cloth and batting for comforts, linen for Willie, a coat.
Denver. Sabbath, June 28th, 1873. We have another beautiful day, but quite warm. We took our writing and walked quite a distance to the shade of a tree to find a quiet place to write. We enjoyed the quiet, but the shade was not sufficient to prevent our being burned by the sun. My husband corrected a sermon which has been reported to be put in review. We took our simple lunch under the tree. About noon, we saw a covered carriage coming towards us. It was Mr. Walling. We decided to start after sundown that night for the mountains. We did not get away from the city until past 8 o'clock. We traveled to Golden City and put up at a hotel. We did not get to rest before 1 o'clock. Colorado. Sunday, June 29th, 1873. We all rested the few hours of the night after we retired. We were on our way about 7:30. We rode about 3 miles and stopped for breakfast. We purchased milk and had a very good breakfast. The scenery is very grand. Large mountains of rocks stretching toward heaven tower one above another. My husband endured the journey well. We took dinner and enjoyed eating in the open air. My husband has been wonderfully preserved. Travel by train from Denver to Battle Creek, 1873. Denver, Colorado. Thursday, November 6th, 1873. We are at Denver. We are preparing to leave on the train at 6 o'clock tonight. Mrs. Walling, Ellen White's niece, is in a very troubled state of mind. She has pursued her course of fretting and scolding her husband and children, Addie and May, until she has weaned his affections from her. He insists that the children shall go with us to California. The mother reluctantly consented. Little May had a little frettish turn, but I was firm and yet gentle with her before her father and mother, and it passed over very well. The mother feels bad. May God show her the error of her ways before it shall be too late. Mr. Walling attended us to the cars and parted with us and his children. The children are perfectly happy with us. En route to Battle Creek. Friday, November 7th, 1873. We had a portion of night's rest. The legislature sits in Cheyenne, which fills the hotels. No room for us to have a bed until 2 o'clock. Then some beds were vacated. We had a good rest when he did retire. My husband felt his mind turned to Battle Creek. We consulted together and decided to go to Battle Creek and send Sister Hall on with the little children. To this, she agreed cheerfully. We arranged our trunks and parted, Sister Hall going to California, and we turning our course to Battle Creek. Travel by train, from Omaha to Oakland, 1873. Dear children, Edson and Emma, we are seated in the cars at Omaha en route to California. We have made our transfer all right. Now we have only one more change to make before we shall reach Oakland, California. This is appreciated by us who have so great an amount of baggage. We slept excellently well last night. Your father is feeling quite well for him. He is cheerful. We have seen but little snow thus far. The weather is mild indeed for this season. In 2 days we shall reach the summit. Then we may be sensible of a change and experience cold weather. Travel by train, from Ogden to Sacramento. Dear children, Edson and Emma, we have been passing over the plains through a very barren, desolate-looking country. Nothing of special interest to be seen but a few herds of buffalo in the distance and an antelope now and then. The scenery over the plains has been uninteresting. Our curiosity is excited somewhat in seeing mud cabins, adobe houses, and sagebrush in abundance. But on we go. From Cheyenne, the engines toiled up, up the summit against the most fearful wind. The iron horses are slowly dragging the cars up the mountain to Sherman. Fears are expressed of danger, because of the wind, in crossing the Dale Creek Bridge, 650 feet long and 126 feet high, spanning Dale Creek from bluff to bluff. This trestle bridge looks like a light, frail thing to bear so great weight. But fears are not expressed because of the frail appearance of the bridge, but in regard to the tempest of wind, so fierce that we fear the cars may be blown from the track. In the providence of God, the wind decreased. Its terrible wail is subdued to pitiful sobs and sighs, and we passed safely over the dreaded bridge. We reached the summit. The extra engine was removed. We are upon an elevation of 7,857 feet. No steam is required at this point to forward the train, for the downgrade is sufficient for us to glide swiftly along. As we pass on down an embankment, we see the ruins of a freight car that had been thrown from the track. Men were actively at work upon the shattered cars. We are told that the freight train broke through the bridge 1 week ago. 2 hours behind this unfortunate train came the passenger cars. Had this accident happened to them, many lives must have been lost.
As we near Ogden, the scenery becomes more interesting than the sagebrush, dugouts, and mud cabins. There are grand, high mountains towering toward heaven, while these are interspersed with mountains of less size. As far as the eye can see them, mountaintops rise above mountains, peak above peak, ridge on ridge, intermingled, while the snow-capped heights glitter under the rays of sunlight, looking surpassingly lovely. As we looked at the varying beauty of this rocky mountain scenery, we were deeply impressed with the greatness and majesty of God. We longed to have a little time to view at leisure the grand and sublime scenery, which speaks to our senses of the power of God, who made the world and all things that are therein. But a glance only at the majesty around us is all we can enjoy.
Between Ogden and Sacramento, the eye is constantly delighted with the wonderful scenery. Mountains of every conceivable form and dimension appear. Some are smooth and regular in shape, while others are rough, huge granite mountains, their peaks stretching heavenward as though pointing upward to the god of nature. There are blocks of smooth, time-worn rock piled one above another, looking as though squared and chiseled by instruments and skillful hands. There are high overhanging cliffs, gray old crags and gorges clad with pines, continually presenting to our senses scenery of new interest. We come to the Devil's Slide. There are flat rocks set up like gravestones of nearly equal depth running from the river up the mountainside far above us a quarter of a mile, which mountain is covered with grass and shrubs. The stones are from 50 to 200 feet high, standing upon their edge as though malleted into the rocky mountain. There are two stone walls about 10 feet apart of this masonry. The space between is covered with green foliage. It is a most interesting and wonderful sight. Dear children, Edson and Emma, we have been passing over the plains through a very barren, desolate-looking country. Nothing of special interest but a few herds of buffalo, occasionally an antelope. The scenery is uninteresting. Mud cabins, adobe houses, sagebrush in abundance of a very strong flavor. But on we go, and the engine toils up, up, up against the most fearful wind we ever experienced. It is all the two iron horses can do to drag the train slowly up the mountain. Fears are expressed that there is danger of crossing the bridge which spans Dale Creek from bluff to bluff. It is 650 feet long and 126 feet high. In the providence of God, the wind decreased its fearful wail to a piteous sob and sigh, and we went safely over. The summit is gained, and now we pass through a tunnel excavated through the Rocky Mountain. We stop a short time for the second engine to be removed, and then we pass along very pleasantly. We cross another bridge, and down the embankment we see the shattered ruins of a freight train. We are told it broke through the bridge the week before. It was 2 hours in advance of the passenger cars. If the passenger cars had met with this disaster, many lives might have been lost. As we near Ogden, we have a change of scenery, something more grand than sagebrush, mud cabins, and dugouts. There are grand mountains and wonderful, towering mountains of masonry, filling our hearts with awe and wonder. Gladly would we linger and view more definitely and fully the different, wonderful, varying scenes presented to the senses, but on steadily moves the iron horse, giving us but a glance at the wonderful works of God in nature. I hesitate whether to place my pen upon paper to give you even the faintest, slightest description of the wild, romantic scenery of the Rocky Mountains. Immense mountaintops rise above mountains. Some mountains of lesser dimensions are wavy and appear smooth and regular in shape. Mountains of masonry have the appearance of being hewed, squared, chiseled, and polished by art, and piled one above another in grand towers, stretching upward toward heaven as though directing the minds of all who look upon them to God. Then we see abrupt bluffs and singular-shaped rocks of every form, huge and without comeliness, having the appearance as though thrown together in most beautiful disorder. We come to a wall of rocks, flat and broad as though chiseled from the quarry and arranged by art, one flat stone overlapping another. Two walls, almost exactly similar, about 10 feet apart, running straight up the steep sides of the Rocky Mountains for one quarter of a mile. This strange piece of masonry is called the Devil's Slide. But I become discouraged at the poor efforts I have made in describing the scenery of nature. Some of the mountains are interspersed with dwarfed and stunted evergreens.
Travel by horse-drawn wagon in Northern California, 1874. Stretching to the right and left before us was still a rapid-running, deep, broad river. We were in a quandary what to do. Your father and I unhitched the horses again.
He mounted Kit's back while I had all that I could do to keep restless Bill from breaking away from me and following his mate. Your father crossed and recrossed the river twice to make sure the way of safety for the carriage. The water came above his boots. We marked the course he took by a mountain on the opposite side. We hitched our horses to the wagon the second time at 9 o'clock at night and passed over to the other side. The water came up to the body of the wagon. We felt to thank God and to take courage. Santa Rosa. We are now at home. Brother, D.M. Canwright, is here. He is certain that Cloverdale is the wrong place for the tent. Cloverdale is a most romantic place, surrounded by mountains, but the inhabitants are a drinking class. It is the terminus of the railroad. It is not surrounded by a farming community. I am satisfied our duties upon this coast this summer. We will write you again soon. Travel by train, by herself, from Oakland to Newton, Iowa, 1874. June 4, 1874. Left Oakland this morning for Omaha for the purpose of attending the camp meeting at Newton, Iowa. I cannot obtain a sleeping berth and must ride day and night in the car and then attend the meeting and labor hard. May God help me to do my duty. We have resided at Oakland about 4 weeks. I have spoken at Oakland and Brooklyn about 6 times under the tent. There has been a great excitement there upon the local option question. The leaders of this temperance movement are women, aided by men. The large tent was granted them, and they held their meetings in it for 1 week. Oakland gained the day upon temperance. There was a majority of 260 votes in favor of no license. The excitement is now changed to Brooklyn. June 6, 1874. We left Ogden about 8 o'clock a.m. We shall arrive at Omaha Monday morning. Mountains are surrounding us, covered with snow. It is indeed a most grand sight. We have passed the Devil's Slide, a strange-looking sight indeed. The wonderful sights we pass are very interesting. June 8, 1874. We arrived at Omaha at 2 o'clock p.m. Here I rechecked my trunk. This was new to me. The day was oppressively hot, but we were at last all ready to go on our way. We traveled until 12 o'clock at night. We stepped off the car at Newton, Iowa, found Brother Hart waiting for me. We rode half a mile through the mud to the campground. We quietly entered Brother G.I. Butler's tent, and I rested my weary body upon a hard straw bed with a straw pillow. It rained powerfully. Journey from Chicago to California, 1875. Dear Willie, we are now on board the palace car. Have good berths secured in the center of the car. We all found good lodgings at Wilbur's. They are usually well. Father heard some men talking in regard to the fare to California, that they got tickets from Boston cheaper for signing a paper that they had a time ticket, that is, do not stop off. We got our tickets for California for $106 from Chicago. We are all feeling quite well this morning. There are some things we will think and talk of in regard to on the cars and write our decision. Mary is cheerful and feeling all right. We hope that you and Lucinda will not overdo, for we want Anna and Lucinda and Willie to enjoy the trip when you come. Dear Willie, we are in good spirits and all are well. Weather is pleasant but cold. We are free from dust and cinders also, for we have to keep the windows closed. We are anxious to hear from you all, and hope to have a letter from you soon after reaching Oakland. Our walnuts are just splendid. Willie, put in the box those you do not use. You must prepare some for yourself on the way.
I want Lucinda to be sure and make every preparation to come to California. At 2 o'clock, we are at Pulpit Rock. There is a wildcat and small mountain lion. We are delayed. It is now 2:30. The passengers got no breakfast before 2 o'clock. They were an uneasy, hungry set. We have enough to eat and are cheerful and feeling tolerably well. On the train, nearing Chicago, 1875. I left Oakland none too soon. We have had the most favorable, pleasant trip across the plains this time that we ever had. There has been no dust or cinders. Our companion travelers have been, with scarcely an exception, agreeable, very courteous. We have not been crowded any of the way. Some have kept their berths made up all day. We have had an entire section to ourselves. I am rested on this journey and shall step off the car with improved health.
On the train, near Sparta, Wisconsin, 1875. Dear children, Edson and Emma, the lamps are being lighted. We shall soon pass through a tunnel. We have passed through 3 tunnels. The last was the longest. I inquired of the conductor its dimensions. He told it me was 3,812 feet long and 266 feet underground. The conductor tells us there is beautiful scenery before us. We find it even so: granite rocks, beautiful trees, green fields, and cultivated lands. Here is revealed indeed a beautiful picture of nature's loveliness. The air is pure. Nature seems fresh robed in her natural lovely dress of green. The waving grain and cultivated soil, the lofty trees with their bright green foliage, make even this world very beautiful. God has given to us tokens of his love. We may read his love in the book of nature. Every tree, every shrub and bud and blooming flower tells us God is love. We look up through the things of nature which God has hung before our senses in his created works, and we adore the giver. The train is delayed a short time. There has been a washout, but the conductor thinks the train will not be long delayed. We are again moving, passing slowly over the dangerous road. We shall get to the campground tonight. No rest, just time to get from meeting to meeting. At the Jewel Hotel in Wyoming, about 3 o'clock. We are disappointed in getting through tonight. We learned about 1 hour since that there were several breaks in the road and no means of transfer. One washout is 40 rods long. We have secured a room in a hotel until tomorrow at 11 o'clock when we shall, if Providence favors, go on to the camp meeting. We deeply regret this delay, but make it a point to be surprised at nothing that may occur and not to become impatient or fault-finding. This place presents a very attractive appearance and the surrounding scenery is lovely. There are low bluffs covered with trees and verdure. Near Eagle Lake, Minnesota, 1875, I send you, W.C. White, manuscript for paper, written mostly while the cars were in motion, in depots, and in almost every inconvenient position. We are now in the midst of camp meeting. Everything is wet in consequence of 2 days of rain. We were hindered on the road. At Wyoming, we were told there was a washout, and the cars would not pass over the road until next day. We tarried at Jewel Hotel, hired a room, and engaged in writing. Next day we took the cars, rode about 16 miles, then came to a sudden standstill. The freight cars had, in passing over the break in the road, broken through. So we waited in the cars from 2 o'clock until 8 before the break could be repaired. I improved this time in writing. We did not reach Eagle Lake, Minnesota, until 3 o'clock in the morning. While waiting on the track for breakage to be repaired, the heavens gathered blackness. We had a severe storm of thunder and lightning, rain and blow. We learned this storm had spent its force before it reached us. On the train between Ogden and Sacramento, dear children, we have had a trying day today.
We are on the plains, and the whole surface of the ground is nearly as white as snow, encrusted with alkali. We have been on the road since Sunday morning at 2 o'clock, 5 days and 4 nights. Everything has thus far been very favorable. We have been, until today, remarkably free from dust. It has been cool and very pleasant. We have rested some and written considerable. This, with the care of our children, Addie and May Walling, Ellen White's nieces, whom she reared as her own daughters, has taxed me considerably. Not that the children have been unusual and unmanageable. They are good children. They are universally cheerful and happy and willing to obey our expressed wishes cheerfully. This has lightened my burden of care wonderfully. Were these children as unruly and boisterous as many children in this car, I should be indeed worn out before this time. But their innocent ways and happy laughs are contagious. We cannot be otherwise than cheerful. On this train, in this car, are many wealthy families traveling with their children. One family, residents of Oakland, California, have 4 children, bold, quarrelsome, impolite, and generally disagreeable.
Near Laramie Plains, Wyoming, 1876. Dear children, we rested well last night. Our quarters are not nearly as good as in the stateroom when we left Oakland, but we are making the best of the situation and are therefore quite comfortable. Our comfortable condition is made by the tone of our feelings within. None can but be happy if they take the happy with them. If we are connected with heaven, the content and peace and happiness of heaven will be ours. Our slights, our neglects, our sorrows and griefs will not, cannot, depress the heart that is borrowing its strength and serenity from heaven. I have enjoyed my breakfast this morning. Food, good. I have eaten no cake, but little cheese, but little blank. Love the brown bread. Brown turnovers turned out their inward treasury in the oven, leaving nothing but crust for us. But we have plenty that is good beside this. I feel that I am right. Praise the Lord for the evidence we have of His care and protection on this journey. Mary does all the caretaking and general matters through excellently. She is very thoughtful of my comfort, kind and attentive. Yesterday, while waiting for a train, we got off and were looking for a stone or something as a memento. A lady said she had picked up some specimens which she would give me. She gave me freely specimens of moss agate, petrified wood, and bits of petrified sage. She said she had come to visit her sister who lived at the station, and she would stay a week and could get all she wished. I thought it was certainly very kind and liberal of her to thus accommodate a stranger. From Omaha to Kansas City, 1876. Dear children, Willie and Mary. We arrived at Omaha about 3:30 p.m., We were immediately put on the sleeping car for Kansas City. Had good accommodations, rested well until 4. We were then obliged to leave the train. We are waiting at a hotel close by Depot to take the train at 10 o'clock for nearest station to Melvern, which is Barbendale Avenue. We know not how far the station will leave us from the campground, but we may find definite directions there. We have endured the journey well. I have a headache this morning, but this is nothing strange, being on the road so long. I have eaten the first warm meal this morning. Mary has eaten twice on the road. We have not taken the nearest route, but the best we could take, because tickets were not sold through. Others came the same route we have taken, because it was the best and cheapest, so we have come the best way. I thought you would be relieved to hear this. We will write you as soon as we can after we get on the ground. We will not write much more now, but we'll get off another today. On the cars. En route to Council Bluffs, Iowa, 1876. Now in Iowa. In 2 hours shall be at Council Bluffs.
Tomorrow shall take the cars for Marshalltown, Iowa. Must travel all day tomorrow. Dear children, Willie and Mary, I thought, as my letter written day before yesterday has not yet been mailed, I would write a word more on the cars. Yesterday we arose early and rode through miles over rough road to see the train move grandly out of the depot, leaving us behind. We then went to Brother O'Brien's and waited till next morning. This was the most distressing day to us we have passed for a long time. We were all three debilitated. I very much so. It is cooler today, and we all feel better. We arose very early, rode to the depot 6 miles, and took the cars at 6:30, and have been riding all day. It is now 5 p.m. I find, when the entire burden of labor rests on your father and myself, we do not find time and have not strength to write even letters. But Brother Uriah Smith will join us in Iowa, so that we shall be better able to write, we hope. We have had very good meetings in Kansas and Missouri, but the best was in Kansas.
On board the train, en route for California, 1877. Dear children, all well as usual. Father slept more than he has done for many nights. He also slept over 1 hour through the day yesterday. It was a clear, cold night, no fire in the cars. We depended on a footstone till we had no fire to warm it. Then, by much exertion, we obtained our tin can of hot water. They would not let us or the porter have any hot water at Omaha. Sister Clemens went to the restaurant, the depot, and 2 private homes. All said they had none. Rum and liquor of all kinds could be obtained readily, but not a drop of hot water. Mary went to a hotel and obtained warm water, but not hot. This she had to heat herself and dared not wait longer for fear of being left. She then started out with a determination and went to a private house and succeeded in getting our can filled. This was fortunate, for Father's feet were almost freezing cold. The porter filled the can at night, and it remained warm all night. He was comfortable. Today he is comfortable. All are crying out now at the prairie fires. Mary has cooked Father's breakfast over the little stove, and we have all had hot drink. She has just heated water to fill Father's can. It is made hot, and it will retain its heat a long time. Tell the tinner it is a complete success, size just right. Dear children, all well as usual. Father slept splendidly last night. We all rested well. Father enjoyed his breakfast this morning. He ate quite heartily. Mary obtained some nice graham flour at Cheyenne, and we have now warm gruel at our meals. Father is cheerful, and we think much better, if we can judge by appearances, than when he left home. We get to Ogden tonight at 6:30. We have plenty to eat. We get hot water to fill the tin can, and it keeps warm all night. Filled in the morning, it keeps warm all day. Mary is an excellent general on such a trip. She manages splendidly. I am getting rested. No fire in car. We feel inconvenienced from cold for some hours in the morning. Then we are comfortable all day. Not much danger of catching heat in this car. It is altogether better for us all. It is so good to be supplied with warm clothing to make us comfortable. He has his warm can of water, warm blankets, and his warm egg every morning, just as he had it at home. We all strive our best to gratify every wish. We are looking forward with pleasure to our arrival at Oakland. We shall be better off there than at any other place this cold winter. May God preserve you, my children, and bless you and Aunt Mary. Cling to the Mighty One. Hold fast to the promises. They will never, never fail. Bear your whole weight upon them and test them. Live in God. Our hours of probation are short at best. Work in God. Put self out of sight. But let Jesus appear as the chiefest among 10,000
and the one altogether lovely. Much love to the entire household, especially to my little girls, Addie and May Walling. I hope that they will learn to come and serve God early. They are none too young to give their hearts to God. Dear children, we have just had a nice walk for 20 minutes at Carlin. Father walked all the time. We rested well last night. Father is cheerful and happy, although our provision is getting stale and dry. Only 3 meals more. We have splendid gruel, equal to custard, cooked by Mary upon our little stove. This car is well warmed, but it was very cold this morning, even in the car. We could write our names on the frosted windows. The scenery now is alkali and sagebrush. We meet plenty of Indians at Carlisle Station. There is one Indian on the train, in irons, who was engaged in the last massacre. He is to be taken to the reservation for trial. We are all doing well, and are looking forward to the time when we shall arrive at our Oakland home. The cars jostle, so I cannot write more. From Sioux Falls, South Dakota, to Colorado, 1879. We are anxious to get to Colorado, where it is cooler. We take the stage tomorrow, ride 25 miles, then take the cars and ride 65 miles, then change and ride 75 miles, then stop over, and next day ride 25 miles to Omaha. On the train en route for California. Dear Sister Lizzie, probably Ellen White's sister, Elizabeth Bangs. After I left you Monday, I was very sick. Tuesday, nervous and suffering with headache, unable to sit up. Tuesday night, we arrived at Council Bluffs. There we stopped off to visit Sister Milner. After walking about half a mile, we found her not at home. I had not tasted food through the day and was still suffering with nervous headache. We walked back to a hotel, the nearest one we could find. It was not very promising. We were shown to our rooms, 2 very small rooms above the kitchen. In the rooms were only small windows, 1 in each room.
The scent of cooking had full access to these rooms, with no current of air to take away the nauseating smell of ham, pork, onions, cabbage, and all kinds of scents. If I had not heretofore been most thoroughly disgusted with pork, I should have been so now. I could scarcely refrain from vomiting. I became sick and faint, but my good daughter Mary opened the window as far as possible and moved our bed so that the head of it was close by the window, the bed being quite nice. We slept well and felt refreshed in the morning, notwithstanding unpleasant odors. We took the transfer car to Omaha. We enjoyed our breakfast very much. There came into the depot a woman about 40 years old, followed by a large flock of children. One boy, about 10 years old, went out on the platform. His mother went after him and came dragging him in, he resisting at every step. She pushed him with violence into the seat, bringing his head with considerable force against the back of the seat, really hurting the lad. Then came screech after screech, equaled only by the screaming engine. His mother threatened him, but to no purpose. He was in for regular war cry. When he became tired out, he lowered his voice to the monotonous, long-drawn-out drawling cry, just for the purpose of being persevering and revengeful. Here the mother, I judge, was as much to blame as her boy. The boy was stubborn, she was passionate. We purchased our sleeping car tickets, $16, to Ogden. We should be 2 days and a half and 2 nights reaching there. We obtained 2 lower berths and were told that if we had applied the day before, we could not have been accommodated. But the travel was light from Omaha that day, which was much in our favor. On leaving Omaha, we found ourselves, and numerous baskets and satchels, well disposed of in an elegant palace sleeper. Only 17 passengers in our car. No babies to cry. No invalids to exclaim,
please close the ventilators? Will you shut down that window? We are at perfect liberty to open and close windows for our convenience. There was nothing special to engage our attention Wednesday night but the prairie fires. These looked grand and awful. In the distance, while the train is slowly moving onward, we see the long belts of lurid flame stretching for miles across the prairie. As the wind rises, the flame rises higher and becomes more brilliant, brightening the desolate plains with their awful brightness. We see farther on haystacks and settlers' homes guarded with furrows broken by the plow to protect their little homes. We saw dark objects in the distance, guarding their homes from the fire fiend by throwing up embankments. Thursday morning, we arose from our berths refreshed with sleep. At 8 o'clock, we took a portion of the pressed chicken furnished us by the matron of the sanitarium, put the same in a 2-quart pail, and placed it on the stove, and thus we had good, hot chicken broth. The morning was very cold, and this hot dish was very palatable. I limited myself to only one meal each day during the entire journey. When the cars stopped at stations any length of time, we improved the opportunity by taking a brisk walk. Generally, in approaching Cheyenne and Sherman, I have difficulty in breathing. Thursday noon, we were at Cheyenne, and it was snowing and cold. Could not walk much that day. All aboard was sounded about 3:30, and again we were moving onward. Nearing Cheyenne, we were interested by the view of the Rocky Mountains. Dark clouds obstructed our view. As we neared Laramie, we were having a hailstorm. Occasionally, the sunlight would break through the clouds, striking full upon the mountaintops. But night drew on, and we were all huddled together while preparations were being made for us to occupy our berths. This night, the wind blew the coal gas into the windows, nearly suffocating me. I was afraid to sleep. This night was the only disagreeable one upon the route. In the morning, after we had taken our breakfast from our well-filled dinner baskets, we felt much refreshed. I wrote several pages back to Battle Creek. Here we began to come to scenery worth our attention.
The cars move slowly and smoothly along, giving the passengers a fair chance to view the scenery. An additional engine is added to help draw the train up the summit of Sherman. We reached Sherman about 6 o'clock and had no inconvenience in breathing. The elevation between Cheyenne and Sherman is 2,001 feet, the distance nearly 33 miles. The ascending grade averages from Cheyenne 67 feet per mile. The two engines puff and blow as if requiring a powerful effort to breathe. At length, the summit is reached, and the descent begins 2 miles west of Sherman. We cross Dale Creek Bridge. It looks frail, as if incapable of sustaining the ponderous train, but it is built of iron and very substantial. A beautiful, narrow, silvery stream is winding its way in the depths below. The bridge is 650 feet long, 126 feet high, and is considered a wonderful affair in this route. We look in the valley below, and the settlements look like pigeon houses. We pass rapidly down the grade through the snow sheds and granite cuts. We have now, as we pass, on a full view of the diamond peaks of the Medicine Bow Range. They are, with their sharp pointed summits, pointing heavenward, while their sides and the rugged hills around them are covered with timber. When the atmosphere is clear, the snowy range can be distinctly seen, clothed in the robes of perpetual snow. A chilliness creeps over you as you look upon them so cold, so cheerless. And yet there is an indescribable grandeur about these everlasting mountains and perpetual snows. But night draws her sable curtains around us, and we are preparing to occupy our berths for the night. The wind was blowing strong against us, sending the smoke of our heating stove into every opening and crevice in the car. I slept, but awoke with a suffocating scream. I found myself laboring hard for breath.
The coal gas was so stifling I could not sleep for hours, dared not sleep. This was the most disagreeable night that I had on the journey. In the morning I felt better than I expected. We again prepared our breakfast, making a nice hot broth. Our two tables were prepared, one in each seat, and we ate our nice breakfast with thankful hearts. The porter, well filled with silver donations, was very accommodating, bringing lunch baskets, making room, and depositing our baggage with all pleasantness. We are known on the train. One says, "I heard Mrs. White speak at such a meeting." The book agent, a fine young man from Colorado, says he heard Mrs. White speak in the large mammoth tent in Boulder City. He was a resident of Denver. We have agreeable chats with one and another. As we move on slowly over the great American desert, with no objects in sight except sagebrush and distant mountain peaks, we seem more like a ship at sea. The massive train, headed by our faithful steam horse, moving along so grandly, seems like a thing of life. You look occasionally back from the rear of the cars upon the straight track, hundreds of miles with scarcely a curve, while wilderness and desolation meet you whichever way you may look. Passing Cheyenne, we soon entered snowsheds, constantly varying from light to darkness and from darkness to light, the only change for miles. I had been growing stronger as I neared Colorado. We were telegraphed to Ogden soon after leaving Omaha for seats in the car for California, and our seats were assigned us just as we were located in the car. We leave, therefore. It is always best to secure good seats when you take the Palace car from Omaha, for that secures you good seats all the trip. Now the tickets have to be purchased at the ticket office before the baggage can be taken into the car. We are all settled some time before the sun has passed out of sight beyond the mountains. Portion printed in the Review and Herald, June 17, 1880. Near Kansas City, Missouri, 1884. We had a very pleasant season with our brethren, then were taken in the hack back to depot. From this point we had a dusty time, could not sleep well. The smoke from the engine was blown back, and it was very strong, and throat and lungs were severely affected with this coal smoke. But all this is over. We are at Edson's. He is pleasantly situated in a location separate from other houses, and standing high and dry. The location is every way better than the one they had before. I cannot write all I would be pleased to write, for I am not feeling, as if I had, much life and energy. I had a severe pain in my heart yesterday. Today my hip troubles me considerably.
On eastbound train, nearing Reno, 1884, to Willie and Mary. Nearing Reno. We'll be at Reno in 1/2 hour. We had a very good night's rest. After you left us, we were told our position was in the next car, and thither we went, seated ourselves, and found it was filled with men. We were the only women in the car. At night, we had two other women. We had tobacco effluvia creeping into our car, which made my heart very active and my throat and lungs sore. But I may not be troubled as much today. My head aches some, but I feel of good courage. We have no checks for trunks. Probably you have discovered this as well as we. We reasoned that the checks will be forwarded to Kansas City. We learned there was a washout at Truckee. The train coming west was delayed, I think, 1.5 days. This is all the news I have to write. Willie, I wish Elder Wagoner and yourself would, in connection with those in St. Helena, put Sister Ings in officially as matron of the institution there. This will give character to her work. We have not yet taken lunch, so I cannot speak understandingly of our liberal outfit, but will tell you in our next letter how this suits us. I am not as debilitated as last year, and think I will do well. My trust is in God. We'll write again today when I may have something to write. Postscript. Nearing Elko Station, about 6 o'clock. We have had a very pleasant day.
A number of men stopped at Reno. Brother Balborn and wife called upon us while the passengers were taking breakfast. We had quite a pleasant visit. Besides us, there are only three men in the car. The porter has been an old hand on the train, kind as kind can be. We have had a little dust and a small spurt of a shower. A telegram was received in regard to our trunks, and the conductor insisted on my telegraphing back to you while he would telegraph to the parties in San Francisco. I knew it was not the least use to telegraph you, for you must know the trunks were not on the train. He insisted on our going into the baggage car. They got a chair, and we climbed up and found no trunks of ours. Then he telegraphed. The agent said he must punch my tickets, or baggage would not be sent. The conductor said I must not get my tickets punched until the telegraph should notify us the trunks were on the way. But the agent said he was mistaken, so my tickets are punched. We have plenty of room, good food, and plenty of it. Sister McComber scalded up the chicken. Will scald the meat tomorrow morning. We arrive at Ogden at 7 tomorrow. I wish you had told me just how far you had paid for a sleeper. Sleeping car conductor says it was only paid to Ogden, so we must go through that process of securing tickets in the Ogden depot. I shall get the porter to do this for me. We are doing real well. I am feeling well. We are having a pleasant trip. Feel very thankful to the Lord for his mercies and blessings. En route to Europe, 1885. En route east, July 13, 1885. We left Oakland. There were 12 in our party. We were well accommodated. About 12 more occupied one end of the car until we reached Mojave. Then we changed cars Wednesday noon. There were only three men in our car besides our party. The heat was very great, but we had no dust. We passed over heavy sand. We passed over a very large body of sand, which was like a lake, almost as white as snow. July 14, 1885. We have very good accommodations. The weather is excessively hot. Thermometer, 125 degrees in the shade. I endure the heat much better than I had any reason to expect I could. I tell our party the best way to endure the heat is not to think about it or talk about it. As we came to Fresno, Brother Moses Church and son came on the cars, bringing a box of peaches, a large box of grapes, and a very large watermelon. July 15, 1885. As the rough class are no longer in our car, we commenced religious services, singing, and prayer. There was one of the workers on the train that looked as though he did not know whether to laugh or to cry. He afterward told Brother Lunt it was the first prayer he had heard for 5 years. His father and mother were praying people. He left home and had been in rough company, but the prayer he had listened to touched his heart, and he felt a desire to be better than he was then.
July 17, 1885. Friday. We had services in the morning and at the commencement of the Sabbath. I spoke to our people in regard to keeping the Sabbath on the cars. I told them there should be every effort made, yes, extra effort on our part, to keep our minds reflecting upon proper subjects and our words select. There should be a determined purpose to honor the God of the Sabbath by keeping it holy. We did not want to lay aside our religion because we were on the cars. We did not want to backslide on the train, but to be in that spirit of devotion that we could keep our lips from uttering perverse things, and that we should be pure and holy, not light and jovial and trifling, but have our words seasoned with grace. The conductor seated himself in our little circle and remained until I had ceased speaking. July 20th, 1885. I could not sleep much during the night, for my pain was great in my hip. I was thankful for the light of day. We arrived at Chicago, took cars at 1 for Battle Creek, Michigan. Arrived at Battle Creek about 8:30 p.m.
met Brother Sawyer, who urged us to go to Sanitarium. Edson was waiting for us, and we took lunch at his house. W.C. White did not come with us on this last stage of the journey. He had business to transact in Chicago. The weather was excessively hot, not favorable for sleeping. Between Reno and Oakland, 1888. Dear nephew, I received your letter and was glad to hear from you, but I have not received one line from Addie. I have just written to her that I shall be in Reno, which is a station one day and night's journey from Oakland on the way east. I shall take no attendant with me, and shall depend upon her meeting me and rendering me the service I shall need at the camp meeting. If she cannot get there before the 1st of June, or if she will meet me to accompany me on the cars from Reno to Sacramento, and thence to Fresno, and 40 miles by private conveyance up into the mountains to Burrow Valley, where we intend to remain until the last of July, I can get along. I must be where so many people will not visit me, for I am much worn with constant labor. This will save Addie some $20, save me some $40, for I would have to take an attendant from here if I did not have her to return with me. I can have company to the meeting, but not from the meeting, as they intend going to Oregon camp meetings. So you can see the plan I have in view. The meeting commences the 24th of May and continues until the 5th of June. I am hoping to meet Addie at that time. I write you this that you may know my plans. I want this to go this morning, so cannot write more now. From Denver to California, 1889. Denver, Sunday, September 15th, 1889. The storm that had come down in steady rain Sabbath, the 14th, had passed, and the weather was pleasant. I spoke to a crowded tent upon the subject of temperance. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame, and am set down with my Father in his throne. Revelation 3, verse 21. I had freedom in speaking. Many outsiders were present and listened with apparent earnest interest. We parted from our friends and dear Mary Sunday evening to take the train en route for California the same night, leaving Denver at 9:05. En route to California, September 16th, 1889. We have excellent accommodations. There are but two parties besides ourselves in the car, and we have plenty of room. I am so weary I must keep my berth made, for it seems as though it would be very difficult to sit up. I usually do some knitting, but I have no strength even for this. I am asking my Heavenly Father for the strength required that I may do His will. I have a message to bear to the people, and although struggling against infirmities, I am not comfortless. I have the blessed assurance, Lo, I am with you alway, even unto the end of the world. The peace of Christ is of highest value. We reached Ogden September 16th at 9:45 p.m., 24 hours from Denver. Although we had a first-class ticket and could have the privilege of the palace sleeping car, we decided the four in our party could save $20 by putting up with some inconveniences on the emigrant train. Money at this time is an important article, for there are missions to be established, missionaries to be sent, and the truth to be carried to all nations, tongues, and peoples. This will require means, and this is ever before me. Save. Save all you can save. My own expenses are very large, to keep my many workers employed and pay them their wages, amounting to $150 per month for rooms, board, and wages. At Ogden, the car was filled with passengers. Some had been waiting over to take this train. They were obliged to wait hours on account of washed-out bridges. September 17th, 1889. The effects of the rain are not seen,
it is dry and dusty. We eat and drink dust. Last night I was much afflicted for want of breath. I longed to breathe sweet, pure air that was not filled with dust and alkali and tobacco. All we can do is to exercise patience and look forward with joy to the time when the sagebrush plains are behind us. White Estate, Washington, D.C., August 22, 1981.